This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3872, for Tuesday, the 6th of June, 2023. Today's show is entitled, Scotty, Update with Replies. It is hosted by some guy on the internet, and is about 29 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Scotty talks about the Oh No news and replies to a few HPR shows.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm your host, some guy on the internet. First things first, quick announcement. I've had to pause the Oh No news because of minor issues. It was brought to my attention that quoting news articles may cause an issue in some areas of the world, areas where fair use may not apply. The show is going to see some restructuring because of that to comply with HPR rules as well. There was also the mention of syndication, which was used as an example to explain something else, but it was misunderstood by me. So the syndication thing does not apply, but I still made my feelings very clear on that subject. So I'm still going to wait on the community's response to the mailing list before I continue with that. And depending on what folks have to say about it, we'll probably just bury it or we'll continue with it, you know, depending on how it goes. But that's it for the Oh No news for now. I'll update you as we learn more. I just want to say as well, you might hear some loud noises in the background. I can't help it. It's motorcycle season. And not only that, you got these guys with these loud cars that have, you know, really loud mufflers and stuff, and they're all out there revving up and being silly. So if you do hear like weird noises in the background, that's what that is. Okay, now into the meat of the show. This is going to be like a reply show. I wanted to first reply to Ahuka, who has been doing wonderful shows covering the Civilization game. I didn't know it at the time, but I really like hearing about these strategy games, and I would like to hear more about certain strategies that were used, like the meta, as we call it today, the most effective technique available. That's what meta stands for in games. I would like to hear more about what techniques that you use and how you like to beat these games, because he mentioned that there were certain two main strategies of beating the game, either wipe out all the other countries or make it to space first, I think was the other one. I'd like to know what strategy he chose and why he chose it. And to keep the shows coming, I enjoyed very much hearing about it. I'd also like to point out some of the background information is really nice to know as well, because I always see like that Sid Meier's in front and I'm thinking like, okay, is this a company or is this like an actual guy that actually created all these games or how's that work, you know? And I like having that background information that he pointed out that Sid actually took a back seat and allow other developers to, you know, write using his name. So, I mean, all of that was beneficial. I especially like the sources that were given in the show as well, where you can go and try some of these games online. So if you didn't have much space on your system, you could just play in the browser, or the information about how the game's drivers were unique to a certain era. And how if you attempted to play the game on newer operating systems, you may run into an issue. And I'm wondering if snap packages would work for something like this. If you could like snap up all those old drivers and everything and kind of just run them today on a modern system. I don't know. I mean, that's worth looking into. Maybe somebody's already done it. I don't know. But I mean, I'm just bringing it up because it was really cool to hear about it. And I thank him for putting those shows out. Now on to the next show. Now, I just want to say that if I don't call your show out here, it's not that I didn't listen to it. These are just ones that really kind of piqued my interest. But Andrew Conway did a show on Yesterday I Saw a Solar Flare. Let me just say that I enjoyed this show, hearing about the different instruments that are used, as well as the, I guess it would be like the disclaimer or whatever. You know, when you buy a new pair of shoes, that little packet of silicate that comes with the shoes, the do not eat packet. I love that he has to make clear, do not use a telescope, like an off the shelf telescope, and go stare at the sun. yeah, that was good. I enjoyed hearing the show. I don't know if this is astronomy or astrology. To me, it's all just space stuff, and I like space stuff. I remember when I was like very young and I learned for the first time that the sun was actually a star and that the star wasn't like this big fireball in the sky, right? I remember thinking like, what? You mean the sun's not made out of fire? It feels like fire if you stand in it long enough, right? I remember when they told me that the sun wasn't made out of fire, but the person who told me that couldn't or didn't take the time, I would say, to explain what it really was. And maybe that was beneficial because my curiosity led me to, you know, if it ain't made out of fire, why does it burn? So I wanted to figure that out. And I eventually found out, but this was, again, many years ago. And I don't think all the information was provided to me, or maybe I just could not understand it at the time. But as the years go on, fast forward to modern times, you know, where you can actually buy a hard drive in the terabytes, I'll say, as modern times. Whereas back then when I was learning, I mean, a 4 gigabyte hard drive would cost you a fortune. And that was a lot of space back then. But anywho, well, it cost you a fortune if you were on the type of budget I was on anyways. But either way, when I finally took the time to say, okay, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to figure out what the sun really is. And it took me down this massive rabbit hole into space stuff. So I began learning, like, it's not a giant trash pile per se, but a star really is just a collection of material, which could be mostly gas. You know, as Andrew pointed out, like 75% of it was hydrogen. And of course, there's going to be like rock, you know, silicate and whatever else that's lying around, because when this gravity well begins, anything that's nearby gets pulled in. So it's going to be a ton of material. And I remember learning that Jupiter was a failed star. So Jupiter was on its way to becoming a star, but there wasn't enough material. Maybe Jupiter was the leftover remains after our sun had achieved nuclear fusion. So the leftover material just got kind of blown away and regrouped into a new gravity well, which became Jupiter. You know, learning that a bunch of just material in space can just clump together, and once it achieves a certain mass, it begins generating friction within that mass. And that friction, just like when you rub your hands together and get warm in the middle there, that friction creates a ton of heat with the pressure from the outside gravity, which causes the material in the center, that hydrogen, to begin to heat up and fuse, and it begin to shed electrons. And that fusion is what we call nuclear fusion. And once the star achieves nuclear fusion, you know, once it has enough mass and there's enough heat and pressure, it will achieve nuclear fusion and ignite, becoming a star. Now, another thing that was really cool about, you know, learning all of this, I also learned that a lot of that hydrogen also takes on metallic properties because it becomes a plasma once it is introduced to the right conditions. So you'll have metallic liquid hydrogen or liquid metallic hydrogen, which is like a huge percentage of Jupiter type planets, you know, gas giants, I guess they're called. And it's like the mantle of these things is made up of this plasma. And I'm just like, whoa, you know, I'm like totally blown away by learning all this. You mean this hydrogen begins to act as a liquid, becomes a plasma, and then it will eventually ignite at some point if it reaches the threshold to ignite to achieve nuclear fusion and become a star. So I was wondering, like, what happens with all that plasma? Does it change over into something different? So when we learn about the mantle of stars and a lot of that internal plasma that's down in there in the you know, the mantle of the star, because the stars are actually multiple different layers, one of the things that happens is there's an electrical current in there as well. And sometimes that current pushes its way out to the surface, or at least this is the way I understand it. That current will push its way up to the surface, and sometimes it'll arc. And when these arcing currents, you know, when this happens, I'm sure I'm butchering the whole explanation, but, you know, it'll cause a solar flare, basically. Also, I also learned that's how sunspots cause as well, because that current carries that internal plasma out to the surface of the sun, and that plasma will then cool on the surface of the sun. Now, because it's superheated from, you know, the mantle, the middle of the star, when it lands on the surface of the star, It gets darker as it cools, and that's the sunspot. But that's the plasma from within the star, like the juice in the star. Go get me some star juice. And, you know, every time I hear a little bit more about space stuff, I'm very interested in it. Because years ago, when I first tried to figure this out, it was like either I wasn't as interested in it back then, or maybe I just could not fathom it. Because when I first was able to sit down and understand things on cosmic scale, it was all mind blowing. Like, black holes fascinated me because I thought it was like, you know how you take a sheet of paper and then you take a pencil and you punch a hole in the paper? To me, that was a black hole, you know, like something just punched a hole in it. Now, as time went by and I began to understand more and more about how these things happened and how stars fuse material, what happens once the star begins to fuse fiite iron, which is a cosmic ash that marks the beginning of the end of the star when it begins to fuse iron. And I began wondering, like, okay, so, you know, you have a black hole, which is like the leftovers from a supernova. What sort of material would that be? Because we know that all the complex material beyond iron is created when the supernova happens, right? You know, that's how you get uranium, gold, and all the other things. They get fused during that explosion and then kind of cast outward into the universe to be used in planets and whatever else out there. But what sort of material was so heavy, once fused, could not be projected outward during this massive explosion? Because iron is pretty heavy and absorbent, and it gets cast out. So what other material on the elemental chart got fused and could not be expelled, yet had enough density to compact into the object that we refer to as the black hole? And these are cool things I'd like to talk about once I begin to understand more about how it all works. But Andrew, he's one of these guys that puts that spark out there for people like me to actually go and investigate these kind of things. You know, talking about the different filters and things you're going to need if you want to go look at the sun, well, you know, with the proper equipment. Don't go out there and blind yourself using unprofessional equipment to view the sun. And the images that he posted were also wonderful. I like looking at these images as well. So I thank him very much for putting this show out here, and I look forward to more in the future. Great show. Oh, look at that. I got so carried away talking about space stuff. I mean, because it's very exciting stuff when you finally sit down and start looking at it. Or at least it was for me anyways. It was kind of stupid until I actually, you know, I thought, well, who in the world would want to, you know, last time I checked, there was no air in space. Why would you even want to go there? That's how I used to feel about it. But yeah, see, here I am again getting carried away. Andrew, I got a couple questions for you. And I understand you may not want to speak professionally on these topics. And I also want to point out that I don't know anywhere near about these topics as you do. So if you would like to entertain my questions, that'd be great. Question one, how long do you think we have before the star that our sun goes red giant? I understand you may not have an answer for that. I understand a lot of people may not have an answer for that. But if you had a imaginative, backed by education, guess, if you could just throw that out there with anonymity, you know, nobody's going to hold you to it and try to cash that check. But we just, you know, conversation here. If you could guess X amount of years or whatever, what would you think that number would be? Also, how long does the process take to achieve red giant? I imagine it's not like one day regular star, the next day red giant. You know, this process probably happens over, I don't know, 1,000 years or something. Yeah. Another question. Do you really think mankind is trying to settle on Mars? I don't. I personally don't think we're trying to settle, build a settlement on Mars. I think we probably learned a lot about the other planets that are out there, and we're using Mars as like our nearest playground to, terraforming, dealing with radiation and things of that nature. From, if you have to leave this planet and go to another one, radiation is one of the things you're going to find, and that's very plentiful in space. So my guess is getting a little bit closer and on a planet with less atmosphere, how would one survive in such a heavily toxic and just, it just seems like death all around. No atmosphere, tons of radiation, almost no water, at least none that we can find. And if we do manage to find water, maybe that technique will apply elsewhere in the universe. Yeah, so I mean, do you think we're actually trying to settle on Mars? Because I don't, especially with the whole red giant thing looming. And I'd also like to ask you, you know, with all the talk of global warming and things, and I get it, this kind of hits that political bell for a lot of people, you know, ding, 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 he's talking politics. No, I'm talking space stuff, right? I'm not going to call it science because I don't have enough knowledge to do science, but I can do space stuff. That's an official term, by the way, coined here on HPR. Do you think that when the change begins to happen, the government or the governing bodies, the scientists and everyone else who monitor the change, you think they'll tell it true? I mean, you think they'll actually put the information out there that no, you're not causing this change because you revved up your car an extra 5 minutes, but because, you know, this is natural. All stars will eventually undergo some change, and this is what our star will do. As a result of that, it's going to get warm, and it's going to continue to get warmer. And, well, you know the result of Red Giant, so you think they'll tell it true? I have to honestly wonder about it these days, because I look at all these billionaires building their ships, trying to quickly build a rocket that could lift up off of the planet, go into space, and then return. As though they're trying to carry as much of their junk into space and get it somewhere safe as fast as possible. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, everybody will be talking all this bunch of, you know, it's politics, hey, and it's politics there and all of that. And meanwhile, the sun's just doing its thing over there. It's eventually going to, you know, change a little more over time. And there'll be people here on the planet with instruments looking up at it. You think they'll be allowed to tell it? You think they'll be allowed to just, you know, flat out says this is stage one of Red Giant. We can expect these changes to happen to the ocean, to the trees, et cetera, et cetera. Honestly, I don't. Yeah, I don't think they'll tell us what's actually happening. I mean, for those who want to find out, you possibly can find out, but I don't think you'll have all of the information. So much of the how long do we have, you know, the countdown, that will be kept on hush hush, and anyone who tries to release it, there'll be some sort of penalty for that, in my opinion. And I would like to know your opinion on the things that I've brought up. But that's enough on space stuff. Great show. I really enjoy space stuff. All right. So next show I want to talk about here. This is a reply to Archer72. He did a show on the Firefox extensions. Another great show. Ken Fallon did a show on the Firefox extensions as well. I love hearing about what people are using out there. I'm a little too paranoid to use Firefox extensions. I'm finally making the transition away from the one I do use, and that's the multi-account container tabs or whatever they call it. It's made by Firefox, but you know, I'll talk more about that in the future. I don't want to bore you too much with my crap, but hearing about these things, I think it's fantastic, especially that dark rated one. I've tested that in the past and I found it to be interesting. And I want to know, especially today, 2023, why is it more sites don't have just dark mode? I mean, it's made pretty clear that a lot of people use dark mode. A lot of people like dark mode. And I think that if you wanted someone to subscribe to your material, one of the things you could offer is a dark mode for subscribers, right? Or you could just implement a dark mode because why not? You know, better for your eyes. A lot of people love dark mode, and it doesn't seem to be a very difficult thing to implement. But then again, I'm not a web dev, a web dev or any of that. So, you know, speculations galore. And I want to know, do you use the, what's it called now? It's not the master pass thing. It's a primary password on Firefox. I know you mentioned that you do use the Bitwarden with the Bitwarden extension. So I'm assuming you don't store any passwords actually in Firefox. And that in this, I will offer as a recommendation for people. Do not store passwords in your web browser. I'm not saying that all the bad things will happen because you do that. I'm just saying if you want to be a little bit safer, I would avoid storing passwords in your web browser. So web browsers like Chrome and Firefox give you the option to save your passwords there, but I wouldn't do it. There's been shady behavior in the past with this kind of stuff, and I just would not do it. Not to mention if you are sharing a PC in your household or whatever, like with your kids or whomever, by saving those passwords in your web browser, that means when a person goes, you know, the person you also share that PC with, if you don't have accounts separated, you know, where you log out and then allow them to log into a guest account, if you just hand over your laptop with you logged in as the administrator with your web browser that has all of your passwords stored within it, you know what I mean? If you just hand that over, I mean, that's bad. You don't want to do that. But here I am. I'm going off on all sorts of stuff again. Good show, Archer. Wonderful show. And I like hearing about what technology other people are using. How are you utilizing technology? Again, I'll just mention here really quickly. I've listened to pretty much every show out that comes out because I listen to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks. That's what I do most of the time. I rarely watch any TV. If I watch anything, it'll be YouTube. But these are just the shows that really kind of pique my interest here that I'm bringing up. And Clatu did two shows that I wanted to bring up. One, the painting toy figurines, I think it was, something like that. But I thought that was pretty cool. I honestly thought that this was like different colors of plastic as well. You know, like in a 3D printer or something, you just print with the blue plastic here, then the red plastic there and whatever else. You know, that's what I thought it was. I did not know like a human actually sat there and painted a figurine. So this was, you know, this was interesting to learn. Now doing it as a hobby, it sounds fun. I like hearing about Clatu doing it. And I like hearing about his reasons for doing it. That was very interesting. He likes finding things away from the computer. So I guess if you work with a computer for most of your life, you try to find a way away from the computer. Whereas with me, I'm behind the wheel. So I try to get closer to the computer when I can. So it's unique to hear how we all either, you know, move toward or away from it. I like hearing his reasons for painting the figurines. And the skateboarding thing was interesting as well. He said skating or skateboarding. It was something like that that he did a show on in the past, which was pretty nice. I like hearing about these activities. And also, I didn't know that painting. Well, now that I think about it, because he did mention that there are different types of paint you can get. The acrylic paints that you can get, like the cheaper ones that you would mix yourself. But apparently this can be an expensive thing. Because especially if you're doing like Dungeons and Dragons, I remember watching a video in the past where this guy had his own custom Dungeons and Dragons kind of board where him and all his friends get together and play. And he had rules where they weren't allowed to touch the figurines. And now I kind of get it. If you had to actually sit there and paint all of this by hand, these becomes like labors of love. You don't want people just kind of thumbing all over it. There's no telling what finger oils and all, you know, if they're eating snacks and have greasy fingers, put all that junk all over the figurine, you know. So I kind of understand it more now. Not to mention if somebody's a little bit childish, want to play around with it and they break the figurine, Yeah, so good show there. Also, the other one he did with When Did the Internet Become Boring? I thought that was very interesting. From the title, I thought that he was going to go more into the whole, you know, chat GPT thing with people using what they like to call AI in air quotes to generate all of this bunch of false feedback. And I thought that's what he was going to, you know, be the primary thing. But it was very interesting because he broke down the speaking versus listening and how the listening is only there partially, you know. One person will say something and just poof, go away. And then when people reply to that, I mean, they do the exact same thing. They're not there to listen and gain from what is being contributed. They just want to react to something and just disappear. I thought that was pretty cool because I feel that way as well. But hearing him articulate it, he gave voice to what I was feeling. And I I'm very thankful for that show. I mean, I felt that way when I, you know, back when I was using Facebook. Part of the reason that I left was there was less and less human engagement. You know, everybody just wanted to spam memes or just yell and then poof, go away. You know, say something crazy and disappear. Same thing with Reddit, like the upvote, downvote thing. I thought it was supposed to serve a purpose, but it gets misused so often. You know, often people will not even explain why they like something or dislike something. It's just that cheap little downvote them and keep moving. And then it starts the snowball effect. Other people just downvote just because the downvoting had occurred. May not even read the statement, really. It's like, okay, it's already got about 20 downvotes. Let me add another. Engagement just gets lost. And I remember the old days on the internet. It was the Wild West as well. Now, I'm not going to pretend like it was perfect. You got your head chewed off royally back then. There were rooms back then. I used to be on Yahoo Messenger as well. There were rooms called the fight rooms in Yahoo Messenger. And this was all voice chat, by the way, where people literally went just to string together profane insults toward each other. And believe it or not, it was not done out of hatred. It was like people went to blow off steam and they knew they had an audience. Afterward, many of the people who were just cussing each other out would leave, go into another room, and then start talking about things they like. I'm not kidding you. Now, I went there just to get a good laugh. That's where I got my degree in swearing, listening to all of these people just, you know, curse each other out the whole time. So it was interesting and funny. That's where I also formed the opinion that the English are better swearers. I don't know what title you would give someone for swearing, you know, other than being vulgar. But I mean, you know, if you had to have a title for it, you know, as in receiving a trophy, I think, what they call it, silver tongue or something like that. But whatever, the English used to swear up a storm. And it would be funny because the accent just sort of added like 10% more, you know, humor to it when they would swear. And plus they would use funny words, you know, like the English slang and whatever else that they were using. Oh man, I had a good time. I'm not going to repeat any of it here, but I had a great time listening to it. But yeah, there was a lot of engagement back then. You wanted to talk to somebody, you would speak to them. They would reply to you. Now, again, it was the Wild West, so sometimes that reply you got was, you know, abrasive, but you got it. Today, a lot of the times, I'm hearing more and more about how you get this AI-generated crap, so not a big fan of it. Even down to the reviews. I love reviews. Like, when I'm looking for products, even if I have no intention of purchasing that product, a lot of the times the reviews are pretty interesting. Learning how people use the product and what they want to share about the product is just nice to read. And when you learn that there's, you know, basically they're using AI to generate a bunch of fake reviews, and now you got to sift through all of that and just, you know, it really kills the joy on a lot of things. So that I like hanging out in Matrix because I kind of know I'm going to be talking to a human being there. Or here on Hacker Public Radio, like I know we're going to be dealing with human beings here.
And squoils. Don't forget the squoils.
I mean, Mastodon, you can kind of include them too. And I'm not talking about the bots that just kind of, you know, they have like the Fediverse bot. Even HPR has their bot to kind of, not talking about those bots, but I mean, human interaction and engagement online really feels like it's not going away, but it's changing for the worse. So thank you for that show, Kletu. I think it's a fantastic show. And that's all of my replies. I've rambled for a long time and my mouth is becoming super dry. So hopefully I'm not making too many mouth noises here. And I'll get back to you guys with more shows in the future. Thank you for making HPR shows. I love them all. They're all great. And this is my reply to just a few of them. Take it easy.
Been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by an
honesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.